From the campus of Eastern Kentucky University and the studios of WEKU, I'm John Hingsbergen. And hello, this is Eastern Standard, our weekly interactive program discussing issues and concerns of Central and Southeastern Kentucky and beyond. And this week, a very special program, actually a recorded program concerning storytelling. This week is actually a week that has been set aside by Governor Steve Beshear with a very special purpose to encourage storytelling in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And we have with us some guests who are going to discuss storytelling, but better yet, better than that, we're actually going to hear some stories from our guests in the studio. So I am pleased to welcome to the studios of WEKU, first up, Mary Hamilton, an award-winning full-time national storyteller. Mary initiated the Kentucky Storytelling Association, or KSA, many years ago and has served on the Kentucky Arts Council. She's now the regional representative for the National Storytelling Network and a board member of KSA. Mary, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Delinda Dent. Delinda is here in Richmond, Kentucky, and as the case with a lot of people in Richmond, she's on the faculty of Eastern Kentucky University. She's a professor and incorporates the art of storytelling into her classroom. Some of her projects with storytelling have included work with the Kentucky Horse Park, Kentucky Writing for Hope Model Elementary School, and a local assisted living complex in Richmond. Delinda, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Bill Watson was one of the folks who kind of got this whole idea rolling. We met a few weeks ago at the Woodland Arts Fair when the WEKU staff were up there, and Bill came by, introduced himself as a storyteller, and we said, storytelling, that's perfect for the radio. So we sat down, we chatted a little bit, and the rest, as they say, is history. Bill Watson is also a regional storyteller. He's been telling professionally for 25 years. He's a retired Christian Church Disciples of Christ minister. Bill, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the opportunity.
Storytelling is an art form. It's been said to be as long or as old as language itself. It's a type of entertainment dependent on audience response. Despite the current prevalence of technology in Kentucky and elsewhere, there still exists a population determined to continue with this oral tradition. Let's talk about this oral tradition of storytelling on this week's Eastern Standard. The show is not live, so we're unable to accept any listener calls or emails during this broadcast, but feel free to interact with us about storytelling on our website at weku.fm or on our Facebook page, the WEKU page on Facebook, as we discuss this week's topic. And let's begin with Mary Hamilton. Mary, as the president of the Kentucky Storytelling Association, is that correct?
Well, I'm president-elect. Named Donna Slayton is our current president,
after
and I'll
all
be president
years?
Starting in January.
After all these years, first time being president?
Second time being president.
Okay. Let's talk about how you started this Storytelling Association, how this came about.
Another storyteller, Cynthia Chingaris, and I sent out emails all over the state to everyone we knew who was interested in storytelling and invited them to get together in Frankfort to have a discussion on would we like to have a Kentucky Storytelling Association or not.
Well, why do I suspect that your storytelling predates email?
It does. Yes. So we contacted everybody. About 60 people showed up, and they decided that, yes, they would like to have a Kentucky Storytelling Association. And 5 people volunteered to serve as an initial board of directors, and they worked for about a year, just those 5, organizing the first Kentucky Storytelling Conference. And that happened back in 2004, and it's been rolling ever since.
So really an anniversary. We're at the 10th anniversary.
Yes, we are. In July, we were 10 years old.
Now let's go back a little farther, but past the era of email. You were telling stories. I assume all of you around the table here were telling stories before you could interact with other storytellers by email. How did storytelling develop in your life, Mary? Where did it come from in you, in your family, in your community? It's not everybody I know is not a storyteller.
Right, but most people do tell some stories as part of conversation. And I would say that I grew up with stories but didn't realize I was growing up with stories. And I think a lot of people don't realize they're growing up with storytelling. My father is a fabulous kitchen table storyteller. Mm. He can't have a conversation without ending up telling you a story. And one way I like to say it is when Daddy tells about something, it's enough to make you wish you hadn't been there yourself. Because when Daddy tells it, it's a whole different matter. It's very interesting.
Are you a native of Kentucky?
Yes, I am. I grew up in Meade County.
And in Meade County, you got your first exposure to storytelling from...
Absolutely, from my family
dad
members.
Dad at the table.
And my dad's mother.
How do you define storytelling, though, aside from the stories? Okay, we all hear family stories. We hear, and, you know, some folks are good at kind of spinning a tale.
Mm-hmm.
Others are kind of, you know, dads can be that way, especially, yeah, sure, you know, just a one-word answers and so forth. And some dads can be out there and tell a story. Some moms are better at the storytelling. What defines that storytelling or the craft of storytelling that you all are involved in? What separates that from just plain, hey, guess what I saw, you know, as when I drove through town today?
Perhaps one way that things are separated is that the folks who end up being professional storytellers need to spend time figuring out, how do I make this story make sense for people who do not know me? When my father's telling stories, he's telling stories to people he knows, and he's telling primarily about something that happened to people they know. So there's a lot of information he won't need to include, because his audience already has a lot of knowledge. But if I'm telling stories to a group of strangers, I need to be aware of what are they going to need to know to follow the story, and I'll need to craft it so they can follow it, even though they've never met me before. So I think that is probably what separates the really good kitchen table storytellers from the storytellers who become more platform storytellers, for lack of a better word to describe the difference. But they tell to strangers and make it still seem personal.
To what extent are the stories that you all tell scripted or in some fashion written down, or are they a completely oral tradition?
I rarely write anything down. I tend to only write things down when I'm getting ready to do a recording, because the sound engineer is a whole lot happier if they have something to follow along with in case we need to go back and do part of it over again. So, and I've written a book, and so I did write down stories as close as I could to how I tell them for my book. But most of what I do is crafted orally, and when I try it out for the first few times in front of an audience, that's when I'm learning a whole lot about what's working, what's not, because I'm watching the listeners and making decisions as I go along about when to speed up, when to slow down. When they look totally confused, so I try to figure out, okay, what did I just say that was confusing? Ah, that was probably it. Backtrack, say that part again in a different way. All right, everybody's with me now. We can move on. So storytellers watch.
Okay.
And read that audience.
We'll talk a little more about the craft and the rationale and the process of storytelling. Let's get to a story before we get too deep into the program and need to take the first break of our show. We were talking about Bill telling the first story, was it? And Bill Watson, perhaps, maybe a 3 or 4 minute story you might be able to share with us to kind of give us a little hint of what storytelling is all about. What do you got for us?
I think the date was September the 11th, 2001, and everybody remembers that sitting around this table for sure. I was hired to go up to Owen County to tell stories to a retired teachers' meeting. And these teachers were recently retired, and some of them had been retired for 30 years. Walked in, and everybody had a long face because we'd spent the entire day watching the television of the towers coming down. And so I stood up in front of them. I said, I'm here to tell stories tonight, but I understand the magnitude of what's happened today. We can either do that, or we can just go on home. And they said, we want stories. So I said, okay, I think I was in the second or third grade, and they had a spelling bee going on in the grade school in Owensboro, Kentucky, where I was. And we were told that if we won that spelling bee, then we would be up in competition of the other grade schools in Owensboro. And if we won that, then we would probably go to a state competition. And if we won that, then we would probably go to national competition. And and go to New York City or someplace like that. Of course, the state was in a foreign city called Frankfurt. And so I studied and studied and studied and studied and came along. I took the test and I felt so confident on it. And the next morning I got there, I couldn't wait for the teacher to tell me that I'd won. And she said, "I'm so disappointed in you, Billy." I said, "What?" She said, "I saw what you did." I said, "What did I do?" She said, "I saw you looking over at Alice's paper, and she got the word always wrong, too." I said, "Oh, if there had been a rock, I would have climbed under it. If there was an exit, I would have taken it immediately. But that was the first and the last time I ever copied off of someone else's paper."
That's great. Bill, thank you. Bill Watson is with us on this week's Eastern Standard. Bill is a storyteller, regional storyteller, telling stories professionally for over 25 years. We'll talk about what that means to be a professional storyteller versus an amateur. We also have with us Mary Hamilton, president-elect of the Kentucky Storytelling Association. She's one of the originators of the association. And Delinda Dent, Eastern Kentucky University professor. We're going to take a short break now, but we have a lot more of our program on storytelling with Bill Watson, Mary Hamilton, and Delinda Dent. And we encourage you to follow up, read more about storytelling, read about events going on across central Kentucky and actually all of Kentucky during this storytelling week by visiting the WEKU website at weku.fm or the WEKU Facebook page. Today's program is a recorded edition of Eastern Standard. Normally, we are live on Thursday mornings and ask for your calls and your emails. You can still send us an email. You can still follow up and discuss storytelling and the issues that we are raising on today's program when you visit the website or visit the Facebook page. We encourage you, by the way, to follow Eastern Standard for program updates and also so you can send us direct tweets during, before, or after our programs. Our Twitter address at WEKUEST. We'll be right back with more of this week's Eastern Standard on WEKU. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and this week, storytelling. Radio is kind of all about storytelling, and you hear a lot of stories on WEKU and other public radio stations. Storytelling has become very popular, and we'll talk a little bit about the popularity of things like The Moth and that whole process that has developed over the last number of years. But today we're focusing on Kentucky storytelling with guests from the Kentucky Storytelling Association. Mary Hamilton is one of the initiators, creators of the Kentucky Storytelling Association and president-elect of that association. Delinda Dent is a professor at Eastern Kentucky University, and Bill Watson, professional storyteller and retired minister. Actually, Mary, very briefly before we go any farther, this week has been designated by the governor as a special week to commemorate or to honor storytelling in the Commonwealth. Tell us about that.
Well, Kentucky Storytelling Week was instigated by the Kentucky Storytelling Association, and the purpose of it is to encourage people to engage in storytelling, to tell stories, to hear stories, to involve people in storytelling in any way they can. And thank you for your radio show to also be involving people this week.
Glad to do so. But so what value does this proclamation have? Well, you know, all this stuff happens up in Frankfurt, or it's happening in Columbus or in the state capitals across the U.S., governors and mayors, presidents even issue proclamations and declare certain weeks with, you know, giving them some kind of meaning. How can this declaration of a Kentucky Storytelling Week make a difference and encourage storytelling from your point of view?
One thing it's done is it has inspired many different organizations to get involved in storytelling. There's a storyteller who's leading a storytelling-based church service. The Paducah-Tillman Speech Club from the high school, they are going to their elementary schools during this week and telling the children Kentucky stories. The libraries in Kenton County is sponsoring a workshop for children and a storytelling performance for all ages. Libraries in Gallatin County and I'm going to leave somebody out, Gallatin County and
they're only 120,
in Providence, right, in Barron County in Glasgow. So public libraries around the state have instigated storytelling performances. Paul Sawyer Public Library in Frankfort conducted the first official Kentucky Liars Contest this week. All of those things happened because of the governor declaring the week Kentucky Storytelling Week. Tale Talk, an organization of storytellers in Louisville, is telling stories at Dayspring, which is a residential home for developmentally disabled adults. They're doing it during Kentucky Storytelling Week. So the proclamation has really made people think, oh, how can I become more involved in storytelling?
Is this the first time for the governor's proclamation?
This is the first time for the governor's proclamation, and next year we're getting bold and we're going for the whole month of September to be Storytelling Month.
Excellent. Again, this is the 10th anniversary of the founding of the Kentucky Storytellers Association.
Yes,
so
it is.
So it's only appropriate that you get the governor's declaration this year. We'll talk more about this week, recognizing storytelling in the Commonwealth. But Bill Watson, as a retired minister, what kind of connection do you see between storytelling and the work that you've done as a minister? Is it? I assume you would see a very close connection between the two.
Well, there is. If you look at the Bible and the New Testament especially, Jesus taught by telling stories, drawing pictures in the sand. And that's how we connect with each other as human beings, is through our own stories. And that you were, I think, alluded to professional and non-professional storytellers. The only difference is that a professional storyteller gets paid for what they do. One of the most difficult things in the world is to stand up before people and talk. I mean, that's one of the number one fears, I guess, is talking in public. But a professional, that's what they do. They get up in front of a group of people that could be four or five, it could be 1,000 people, and they do the stories and they get paid for it.
In what context would a person be able to hire a storyteller? You do parties, bar mitzvahs? I mean,
well, I go wherever the money is. But one of the primary sources that people around the state could use is kystory.org. Mm-hmm. And there is a storyteller listing of storytellers across the state that one can contact. Or if you have a particular venue that you would look for a storyteller, you can fill out a form there. And it goes out to all of our members in Kentucky. And we can bid on that. We can call and say, here I am. This is what I do. And I would like to be able to be a part of what you're doing.
What's the most unique situation in which you've told stories?
Oh, my gosh. I think every one of them is unique. Everyone is different. You don't have the same audience for everything that you do. I was telling the other two guests here about at the Northern Kentucky Storytelling Festival. And I went up on stage, they introduced me, and I was paralyzed. I couldn't remember one word of any story that I'd ever told in my life.
Wow.
And so the only thing I could do is talk about my experience at a motel there up in their area. And they were having a dog show, and they had all their dogs out in the hallways. And people started laughing at that, and I said, okay, I'll go with that. And then all of a sudden the stories came to me.
Interesting. You know, Mary made a mention of the Liars Festival and so forth. Why do we have that connection when we talk, at least when I grew up as a kid, you know, we would be told if as a child you were speaking an untruth or trying to relay to your mom, especially, something, but you were not quite being accurate about it, and she would accuse you of telling a story. How do you all feel about that connection between lying and stories?
Oh, I think it's an absolute joy that I got in trouble growing up for telling stories and confessed repeatedly my storytelling failure. And since 1983, it's what I've been paid to do. I just think that's one of the greatest things that can happen in any person's life.
Let's draw a dilemma.
Get paid for that childhood sin.
Yeah.
That's the truth. Well, that's the truth, to now be paid for that childhood sin. I just think it's incredible.
Well, my mother used to tell me, and I can still hear her voice today, don't story me.
Mm-hmm.
And you grew up, and here you are.
That's it. I'm getting paid 12 years later
telling stories.
Absolutely. It's a gift. No one knew to tell us that it was a talent that needed cultivation. Mm-hmm. It seemed like something that should be stamped out, but it's a talent. It's a gift. Hey.
Let's turn to Delinda Dent as a college professor. Actually, we've never identified what are you teaching, creative writing, or what is the level of your what kind of teaching are you?
I teach in the College of Education or the New School of Clinical Educational Experiences. I teach children's literature and literacy courses, and I teach at the undergrad and the graduate level. And storytelling becomes very important with literacy in the beginning of how kids learn to read, and so storytelling becomes a venue or a way or a vehicle for my students to be able to relate to kids, to learn how to help students tell stories, to learn how to learn about different parts of stories, how to write stories, and then how to take them and learn to, you know, tell them themselves. So
you've got your iPad in front of you. I think if I challenged everybody to pull out your phones, everybody would pull out a phone, and we have some kind of technology we walk around with. The kids, I assume they're walking into school totally wired or wireless, actually, with technology in today's world. And even the very youngest of children going into kindergarten this fall, I'm sure, you know, have a background in technology, and many schools are issuing technology. What does that technology do, or what has it done to the process of education?
You know, it's taken storytelling to a different level. We still do storytelling, and we teach our students how to do what's called digital storytelling now. And we do that by helping them learn a story or make up a story or learn a story and then digitizing it and then sharing it with students. Last semester we did digital stories for McCready Assisted Living, and we did various stories about the residents that were there. And the students found fabulous stories that they didn't think they would find. I guess the largest gift that we gave last semester, one of the gentlemen, just before he passed away, we finished his digital story, and that his kids did not get there in time for him to see him before he passed away, and they had the copy to give to the parent or to the kids of the digital story.
Well, now what does a digital story look like?
A digital story is, well, it can have different venues. It can be something that's just auditory, where you're telling the story as we are today. Or it can have pictures, and some of the digital stories are actual pictures of people's lives that they go through. It can be pictures that are put together from artists. It can be pictures that are taken off the net. But it's a story that is much like a book, usually has some music behind it, has words behind it, and has a story of, you know, what they want to tell.
And stored where and what kind of medium? On a computer, on an iPad, on the web?
A little of all of those.
Okay.
CDs, DVDs, you know, you can store it on jump drives, your computer, your laptop. They can be audio, where you just have your, you know, your regular cassette players, or not cassette, that's not the correct term anymore.
They were a little bit more analog.
Yeah. But anyway, we've got multiple ways to store them. We store some of them on the web. We did some with the Kentucky Horse Park, where a website was developed, horseytales.weebly.com, that we've done horse stories from Kentucky Horse Park about the various horses that are out there, Kentucky Riding for Hope. We've done some stories for them where the students can go back, and we've got it's on all on websites. So we're doing it in different venues, but it's a great way for us to help our students learn to take it out to the next generation of students so stories don't die.
As we were meeting before the program here, you mentioned that you had a story that you use as kind of an introduction to your students. And what level are your students?
These students are beginning in the education program, so they're juniors, most of them. And they're just,
so they've been in college for a little while?
They've been in college for a little while. This is their first, some of their first classes for education classes. So I usually start with the story of how storytelling came to be. And it's a little bit about the importance of storytelling for my students. A long, long time ago, in a village lived a lady who had no children. There was in another village a young boy who lost his parents. The elders of the villages decided that they needed to put the two together. So they became a family. The mother began to teach her son how to hunt, how to fish, how to take care of himself. And through the years, she continued to do that. And as he grew into young adulthood, she said to him, "Son, you need to go out, and you need to learn how to do this by yourself. So I'm sending you out today, son, to do that." So he begins to go out, and he shoots a couple of birds and catches a couple of fish and brings them back. And she says, "Oh, you did a wonderful job. It's just wonderful, wonderful." So he goes back the next day, and he brings back 3 birds and 4 fish, and she continues to get him excited about the hunting and the fishing. And as he does, he has to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into the forest. Well, he gets out there one day, and he hears, "Come, sit. Listen to my stories." He looks around, swings around. He says, "What is that?" And there's nobody there. And he hears, "Come, come, come sit. Come sit and listen to my stories." And he realizes it's this huge rock that's there. And he goes and he sits, and the stories begin to come of how the earth came to be, how the earth will die, how people get along, how we need to take care of our earth. And so he ran at dusk, and he went, "Oh my gosh, I got to get home." He didn't have any birds. He didn't have any fish. The mother says, "What in the world happened?" And he says, "I can't say. I sat on a rock all day today and talked to a rock. So she'd think I'm crazy." So he goes back the next day, and he's so enthralled. He goes back to the rock immediately, learns more stories, hears more stories. About the fourth day, the mother's getting a little bit, you know, what is going on? So she sends her nephew to go see what's going on. So he's sneaking up behind the young boy, and all of a sudden he hears the rock go, "Oh, you brought somebody with you today. Who did you bring with you? You brought somebody else. Come, come sit." Well, the nephew's spinning around going, and the little boy says, "Ah, come on, come sit on the rock, listen to the stories." So they listen to stories all day. Dusk comes. They go back with no birds, no fish. Well, of course, the mother by this point is just going, something's going on. She sends her brother with them this time. The brother goes, "Oh, you brought an adult today. come sit, listen." Of course, at the end of the day, the rock says, "Tomorrow you bring the village with you. You bring them all. You bring young, you bring old, you bring the in-between, you bring lunch, and we're going to sit and tell stories today." They run back to the village. Everybody comes with their picnic basket. Everybody's there the next day. And the rock says, "I'm going to tell you stories today about how the earth began, how the earth will end. I'm going to tell you stories about how to take care of the earth. I'm going to tell you stories about how to get along with each other. And at the end of the day, and I've finished telling the stories, I will tell no more. It is up to you to be the storytellers and carry on the tradition and how our world began, how our world will end, how we get along with each other, and how to save the earth."
Delinda Dent, storyteller. And this is the introductory story you give your students when you're talking about the concept of digital storytelling and the process of storytelling.
I do. They have to have the experience of making up and learning stories themselves. And how do you do that whole process? Because then they can take it out into the schools and do that. The students are going out to Wakel Elementary on September 11th, and they're going to help with the family literacy night out there. And one of the things that my students are going to be doing is a storytelling center out there for them to begin to know the importance. Then we traditionally do a storytelling festival at the end of each semester where the students have practiced and learned a story. And we, in the past, have worked with model students, and they've come over and done the storytelling festival. This year, I think we're going to do a combination of Madison County and model.
And so. Model is the campus laboratory school on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. Yes. One of the few remaining, I guess, of a tradition that had been going on for a number of time, for a long while in a lot of universities. These are what, K through 12?
They're K 12? Through, well, actually, they're preschool through 12th grade now. Mainly K through 12, but we have a few preschoolers that are there. And I think there are under 100 model labs left in America today.
Oh, still that many. Well, Delinda Dent, in just a couple of minutes before we take another short break, how do your jaded college juniors who are living off of their iPhones and iPads and Androids, and they watch, you know, they may not even watch live TV anymore, they listen to music and watch TV shows off of electronic devices that they carry around with. How do they react to this oral storytelling that you expose them to?
At first it's, Master Strat, we can't do that, no, you know, when they get. But by the end of the time, when they watch the kids' faces tell the stories, and they've learned the importance of it, many of them have come back and said, I tell stories in my classrooms now. Mm. I see the importance of telling stories. Many of them are digitized, as we've talked about earlier, but many of them you still tell stories. And they realize that they've grown up with stories all their life, and they realize the importance and the value of it. So
does it matter? Does the medium matter?
Not
Marshall
at all.
McLuhan, you know, the medium is the message?
No, not at all. It's a story that counts. It's still the basic story that... It doesn't matter if it's oral or, you know, on a digitized piece. It's the story itself.
We're going to take a short break. We're talking storytelling on this week's Eastern Standard. Delinda Dent, also with us, Bill Watson and Mary Hamilton. Another segment of our program coming along. We encourage our listeners. This is not a live show. It's a recorded show. But we encourage you to go to our website, weku.fm. You'll find the audio for this show and the bios of our guests, and you can interact, maybe tell a story, react to something you've heard on this program, and do the same on our Facebook page, the WEKU Facebook page. Look for Eastern Standard. Also follow us on Twitter at WEKUEST. More of this week's program on storytelling in just a moment. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we're talking stories on this week's program. Our program this week recorded in advance rather than actually a live show that we normally do here on Thursdays at 11 o'clock. We're talking about the storytelling and the Kentucky Storytelling Association, and this week being Kentucky Storytelling or Storytellers Week across
Kentucky Storytelling Week.
And with us, Mary Hamilton, who is president-elect of the Kentucky Storytelling Association. Also with us, Delinda Dent, a professor at Eastern Kentucky University, and Bill Watson, professional storyteller and retired minister. Mary, we spoke with you a few moments ago. We want to turn to you and get a story from you. You're likewise, are you all professional storytellers? I guess Delinda is a professor, as a teacher.
It's just, I'm not a professional as much. These two are professionals. I do it to teach my students. I love telling stories.
But you get a weekly paycheck and the whole works here.
Yep. So,
but Mary, you and Bill, people turn to you and draw you in, invite you to come to events and tell stories.
Yes, they do. Wide variety of events.
What about you in terms of a most unique event that you've ever spoken to? When you looked out at the audience and thought, I can't believe that I'm talking to this crowd or in this venue or in this situation?
Oh, gosh, I guess I always believe it. Gee, John, no particular event is coming to mind.
Okay.
I've told at zoos.
That's
in museums. I've told in libraries and schools and in tents at storytelling festivals. And I used to do campfires, but smoke bothers me too much now to do those. So it varies.
That's kind of what I'm wondering, looking at the possibility of events. But say people are having a family party. We just had the holiday a week and a half ago, Labor Day holiday. Can people hire a storyteller to come for a family picnic or their family get-together?
Sure, they can. I've told it a couple of bat mitzvahs. I most recently told for the Bluegrass Bankers Association. I was their banquet entertainment at their conference. So really, it varies greatly.
Well, let's turn to you for a story, Mary. You've got a repertoire of a few stories. Do you know how many you actually have?
A couple hundred or so.
A couple hundred?
I think.
And you say they're not written down for the most part?
No, they're not. Mm-mm.
So roll back into your memory banks and pull one out for us and tell us one right now.
One of the things that really intrigues me about storytelling is that it really, each listener can sort of decide what the story's really about when they hear it, instead of the storyteller determining this is what the story is about. So this is a story that's a Chinese folktale, and I also want to tell you a little bit about the way one person ended up interpreting it. They say that the immortals were looking for a human who might be worthy of taking a position as one of the immortals. And some of the immortals said, well, that man down there, he's generous, he's kind, he's wise. He's a very good candidate to become one of the immortals. Well, not all the immortals were convinced. And so one of them decided to go down and test the man. He went down, he walked alongside the man for a while, and then, just to see how generous the man really was, the immortal pointed to a small rock, and it immediately turned into gold. And the immortal said to the man, would you like to have that golden pebble? And the man said, no, thank you. The immortal thought, he wants something bigger. And so they walked along, and the immortal pointed to a stone, and it turned to gold. And he said, would you like to have that golden stone? And the man said, no, thank you. The immortal thought, he must want something bigger. And they walked along, and they came near a boulder, and the immortal pointed to that boulder, and the boulder turned into solid gold. And the immortal said, would you like to have that boulder? And the man said, no, thank you. And the immortal said, I have offered you a pebble, a stone, and now a boulder made of solid gold, and every time you have said no, isn't there anything that you want? And the man said, well, yes, there is something I want. And the immortal said, wonderful, what is it? What would you want? And the man said, well, what I'd really like to have is your finger. Now, you can interpret that as, you know, absolute greed. But here's a story about it being told. One of my storytelling teachers, Laura Sims, was working with some of the boy soldiers in Africa, and there was a boy that she was wanting to adopt. She did succeed in adopting him. And when she was wanting to adopt him, there came a point in the process where she was going to have to send him back to Africa. And he had been a boy soldier. He didn't want to return to being a boy soldier. And in the taxi cab on the way back to the airport, he said, Laura, tell me a story. And she told a version of that story, with no idea why that story was the one that was coming to mind. And once he returned home, he called her and he said, I've been thinking about your story and thinking about the story, and thank you so much for telling it to me, because it reminds me, don't settle. Know what I really want and hold out for what's going to change my life forever. Don't settle for anything shorter than that. Stories, they've got so much potential. I mean, hold out for the source of the gold. Don't just take the gold. Hold out for the source. Hold out for, you know, education or jobs or the source. So they can be interpreted in so many ways. And I just find that to be a fascinating thing about story and the art of storytelling.
And that's what I think makes it so powerful when you tell those stories to children.
Absolutely. It sparks their mind. They're making their own pictures. Yeah. They're not being shown. They're developing their own images, and they're thinking and coming up with their own interpretations as well. And they say it's so important that we teach people how to think.
Yes.
And stories invite you to think.
Mary, you talked about telling a version of that story, the story mm-hmm. that was really, you said was originated in China.
And yes, talking about as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. The elders and, you know, terminology that's a little bit, odd for us as Americans in the 21st century. But are some of these stories kind of universal? Like, is there a version of that story in Denmark and another version of that story in Mexico and another one in the Pacific Islands?
I don't know about that particular story because I haven't done a lot of research on it, but I have done a lot of research on the Cinderella story, and there are hundreds of versions of the Cinderella story. So there are some stories that there are just widespread versions of, but I don't know that about that particular story.
But universal themes. I mean, what would there be a certain group of themes that you all find in your stories? We're hearing about generosity and just the human spirit being enriched by storytelling and so
forth. Well, what Delinda said in her story about the stories telling is how we get along with each other. Stories do that. They talk about how do you live? How do you live in relation to each other? How do you live in relation to the planet? How do you live? What does it mean to be human?
The getting along piece, I think, is universal all the way through. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of bravery. You see a lot of generosity. You see stories of overcoming, you know, difficulties, I think. I think those are some of the, you know, common themes.
And there are stories out there, a lot of them across cultures, about people who are extra tricky and extra greedy,
yes.
And often they
trickster.
End up doing themselves in.
Yeah.
You know, the tricksters
Tritales.
Often get
yeah.
themselves in just as much trouble as they get anybody else into. And so we learn how they function as well,
so
how
morality
the trickster
plays.
Helps
morality
shake up
stories.
The world.
Yeah.
Mm. Yes, but they're not often, although there are fables out there that tend to have stated morals, mm-hmm. many stories provoke thinking and provoke us to think about, do we agree with the decisions those characters made? Do we disagree with the decisions? If we were in a similar situation, would we want to do what they did? Or would we hope to be able to do something different? The stories don't always point toward one and only one interpretation and one and only one lesson. And that's one of the amazing things about it, because there's not just one way to be, and it's something we have to figure out as we go along living in this life, and stories help us do it.
Well, picking up on that theme, we have a retired minister here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill, many people use religion and the stories of religion and lock them in and say, this is the meaning of this
yep.
story. Don't follow it. Don't follow this rule. Don't abide by this story to a certain exact specifications. And, you know, you know where you're going. To a very, very bad place. How do you, as a minister, you know, retired, yes, but you're at heart still a minister, still somebody ministering to people. How do you react to that? This is what the story means, and this is what you need to believe.
Well, it's very difficult as a minister, because a minister is preaching to the converted, and they've heard the story so many times that they don't listen to the story. So how do you present the story that they will listen to the story? And that's what I try to do with what I call sort of having person leaning right, and all of a sudden I go left. And they have to catch up a little bit. And also, it depends on what type of stories you're telling. If your client, for example, just wants entertainment, they want laughter, it would be different than fairy tales and this
mm-hmm.
type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I gear it towards.
Going into another very dangerous topic, politics. I mean, politicians tell stories. They begin campaign speeches or State of the Union addresses or major policy statements with stories. How do you all feel about the use, and more people writing speeches? You know, they go to speech class and they're taught, start with an interesting story. How do you all feel about the use of a story as a kicker, as a beginning of a conversation, as an attention getter?
Well, I think what a politician does is try to get into the person's psyche, where they live, what they've been doing. And so they try to use story to say, I'm a part of you. I am one of you.
And try to help us imagine what the thoughts and the ideas of the politician, how those could have an impact on our individual lives mm-hmm. by telling us the stories of individual people. Because when we hear theories, it's hard to imagine what that theory, what that plan, how that would have an impact on me as an individual. But if it's put in terms of a story and I get to hear about a particular person's experience, I can relate to that other person. So
our current president does it in the State of the Union address, and all the presidents do that, and bring in the outside people and say, well, here's somebody who was on the front lines, you know, he's a part of
it. And this is what happened to them, and here's
how
we made a difference.
A president a few decades back who's still referred to as the great communicator. Because of background as an actor, Ronald Reagan, very popular among a lot of people, even those who may not have agreed with him on his politics, thought the guy was a great communicator because he could tell a story, because he would zero in on somebody at the State of the Union address and focus on somebody and their personal story. Let's, in the last few minutes of our Eastern Standard program this week, talking about storytelling with Mary Hamilton, Delinda Dent, and Bill Watson, let's talk a little bit about where people can experience storytelling. Where is storytelling going on? I mean, if I want to hear music, you know, there are all kind of venues, and I can bring it up on my iPhone and listen. I can turn on the radio for us old-fashioned folk. I can go sit and listen to some live music. Watch it on TV. But for storytelling, is there a club you can go to? Is there an event? I mean, it's Friday night, I'd like to hear a story. Where do you go to hear a story?
Well, I don't know where you go on Friday night, but I know where you go on the last Monday of every month. On the last Monday of every month, you can go to the Lexington Public Library in downtown Lexington, and you can be part of the Wandering Storytellers event. That's an event sponsored by KSA. And there's always an open mic segment, so you can tell a story if you wish, as well as listen to stories.
I was wondering about that. So the equivalent of karaoke?
Somewhat, yes. Yes.
And they also have a stage there. It's a theater.
It's a theater.
And you are the person up there behind the mic telling a story. It's quite an experience.
So there's often a featured teller. Four times a year, there's a story slam where it's a competition with prizes. 5-minute time limit. But every month, there's some storytelling. Either someone is invited to tell, and then there's open mic time, or it's story slam, and after the competition's over, if there's a little additional time, there's open mic. That's the last Monday of every month. On the last Tuesday of every month, you can go to the Headliners Club in Louisville, and that's where the Moth Louisville happens. Mm-hmm. That's an open mic story slam, always has a theme. You can go to the KSA website, kystory.org, look at the event calendar, and that tells you what's coming up with storytelling in Kentucky and the nearby parts of adjoining states. The last weekend in September, people can go to Cave Run Lake near Moorhead and go to the Cave Run Storytelling Festival. Wonderful. That's developed itself as one of the premier storytelling festivals in the country. On Friday, October 10th, you can go to the University of Louisville campus and go to the Corn Island Storytelling Festival. So storytelling is happening, and on the event calendar on the Kentucky Storytelling Association website, kystory.org, you'll find storytelling events listed. And if someone knows about one that we don't have listed there, it's just because they haven't told us yet, because we will put it there.
Before I let you all leave,
we want to help people find storytelling.
Before I let you all leave the studio on the campus here today, I'm going to ask you to leave me some resources and some of this information we can put on our website for our
listeners. That would be wonderful.
Anything else, Delinda or Bill, that you're aware of in terms of specific events? Well, let me toss this out then. With just a few minutes remaining in today's program, is there anything in you all that laments what's happened with technology and the development of storytelling? I mean, storytelling used to come from mom sitting with the kids in the bed, rocking the cradle, starting with that, or dad reading from a storybook. Happened around the kitchen table, happened over the campfire, maybe out at the cave for some of the very earliest of humans. Does this new technology do anything that harms storytelling?
I think that storytelling, as much as we do with digital storytelling, as much as we do with audiobooks and videos, there's nothing like sitting a child in your lap or telling a story to a live audience or having a sermon that has a story or political story and having people listen. I don't know that it'll ever be. I don't know that digital will ever take away from that. I just think there's something
and
different.
There's that conversation around the table.
Yeah.
So as long as people gather together to have a meal, there's going to be storytelling.
Can look in your eyes and see the gestures and your facial expressions. Yeah.
So I'm a little saddened occasionally if I'm in a restaurant and I see people simply looking down at their laps and never looking up at each other across the table. I think, gee, you're probably missing something there.
More but often than not, they're texting somebody across the table.
They may be, in which case they're just using a different venue and still telling each other a story, because a lot of story evolves through conversation. So lament is a little too strong a word for what might be happening. I think storytelling is surviving.
And evolving.
And evolving,
Mary,
yes.
You pulled out something else you wanted to share with us as we wrap up.
Well, if people want to learn how to tell stories, they can come to the Kentucky Storytelling Conference that's happening in Bowling Green November 7th and 8th, 2014, and they can read about that on the Kentucky Storytelling Association website as well.
Mary Hamilton is president-elect of the Kentucky Storytelling Association. She's one of the initiators of the association 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the governor has declared Kentucky Storytelling Week. That is occurring this week. It was September started
8 through 14.
On the 8th, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary, thank you so much for being with us. Delinda Dent is a professor teaching education, teaching teachers at Eastern Kentucky University. Delinda, hope to see you around on campus. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Bill Watson kind of got this whole thing started. Thank you for helping to coordinate this. Bill Watson, a retired Christian Church Disciples minister, regional storyteller, telling stories professionally for 25 years. Thanks for being with us, Bill.
Thank you very much. We didn't meet by accident, you know.
Apparently not.
Serendipity in story. Thank you much for having us, John.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Associate producers are Richard Turner, Logan Riley, Andrew Moorhead, and Morgan Crutchfield. Morgan produced this program, her very first program. Excellent job putting together this program together. And likewise, Brian Bartlett is at the controls. For Eastern Standard at WEKU, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.